Hello, everyone. This is John Schuster, and I'm the host of the podcast Stories for the Ages. And in this podcast, we look at the developmental opportunities for the aging process. And today's program is very much about that. It has a strong spiritual theme. As I interview two male, younger, old guests, one in his late 50s, one in his mid-60s, and you'll hear strong themes of what's possible when you move away from the busyness of midlife, and what learning and unlearning, and what even transcendence and playfulness and spirituality is possible in our older and later life. Our first guest is Dan Sedmak, a recently retired physician who is become quite the walker and the hiker, and I will let you talk about that, Dan. And from a very busy life of parenting and professional duties, you'll hear the story of what's going on with you. Welcome, Dan. So tell us your story.
So I retired approximately a year and a half ago at the age of 63. Mm-hmm. And I had three very good professional colleagues, friends, who I used to sit down and we talk about what we were going to do when we retired in 5 years, in 8 years. Those three friends have passed away.
Wow.
They all passed away before their retirement.
Wow.
And each time that happened, I reflected not only on my friendship and the loss of this world of that individual, but I reflected on what this meant in terms of my own delayed gratification.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made a decision I wasn't going to delay gratification anymore, that there was a lot more to do in terms of relationships and experiences. And experiences are something that I cherish in those realms, and that includes travel. So I made a decision that I would retire before my health retired.
Mm-hmm.
and that's what I did. And so, as I said, that's been about a year and a half ago. And what have I done since then? Well, the most important thing I've done is I've progressively learned how to enjoy this phase of life.
Uh-huh.
It's one thing to say one's going to step out and one's going to begin traveling and one's going to do this and one's going to do that. It's another thing to get out of what I call that velvet rut of one's previous lifestyle and one's previous social group and the culture that they've been in for 30 years and switch over. And certainly I was prepared and knew that I would be doing that. But it's another thing to experience it. And so I'm happy that that's been progressing very well. I feel very comfortable with where I am right now. I do some things on the side. I, as you mentioned, I volunteer at Voice Corps, reading the Dispatch, and next week I'll be reading Farmer's Almanac.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have any weather questions for next year, and when the plant those crops. I enjoy that. And I also have done a fair amount of coaching this past year. I don't know how much I'll be doing going forward, and that's leadership and executive coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kept me fairly busy. And what has really been my focus, in addition to spending more time with family, has been travel.
Mm-hmm.
And I've taken up walking in a major way.
Mm-hmm.
This past summer, I walked the El Camino de Santiago. We started in St. Jean-Pied-de-Port, France, and went to Santiago, which is northwest Spain. That was a wonderful trip. I went there by myself and met a Camino family, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all the friends that you travel with that you meet along the way. Wonderful experience.
So I'm going to interrupt you here just to ask you a couple more questions because it's great, but I hope all the listeners have heard the him lay out this foundation of, we could talk for about 3 hours now, Dan, so with what you've laid out there. But I have to ask two questions about this transition, then I want to come back to the long pilgrimage walk that you did at Camino, because people will want to hear that. But what's the biggest challenge that you've had learning how to enjoy this stage of life?
Well, the biggest challenge has been between my ears,
mm-hmm.
has been in a way I view how I can live this life. Before I lived a life that was highly regimented, with a to-do list that was very long, short, long-term projects, etc. And to be able to sit back a little bit from that, to live more in the moment, to be more spontaneous, has been something that has taken work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't do that for 30 years. So to go to this different way of being has taken some time. And that has been the single biggest challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody has their various challenges, and that's been my unique challenge.
Mm-hmm. Some ways you've met that challenge? What are some practices or techniques?
Well, I think my path is, as I said, it may be a little bit unique from others. And one of the ways I've met that is I have to thank in part my coaching program, mm-hmm. which was the Hudson Institute, and for what it introduced me to. But I've actually got fairly interested in Buddhist philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing a lot of reading in that and a lot of talking with friends about it. And that really has opened up a new way of thinking and being. I am much more open to spontaneous events. I put myself out there a little bit. So what, you know, when one lives a very regimented to-do list life, one, especially if you're in an environment where everything is controlled for you by others and things you have to suddenly be the initiator of all those events is a very different way of being. And the more you do it, you know, the easier it gets. What's the saying about courage? Courage is a muscle,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
and learning to live in a fully retired way, or I don't even like to use the word retired. I really consider myself in the third phase.
Mm-hmm.
To really live this third phase of my life in a way that now I certainly can do financially, and I can certainly do in terms of my children and now adults. It's been a learning process,
mm-hmm.
and yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I'm glad I asked. The between the years thing is probably what we're trying to get at it the most in this experience of these recordings. Is what? How do we talk sense to ourselves
exactly
at this stage of life? And listening to a person like you say you've had to talk to yourself differently and think through things differently is useful. So many things I could say here, but probably the one I'd go to is this exercise walking piece. What's the walking thing about for you, Dan?
Walking is two things, John. Thanks for asking. So the first thing is it's physical exercise, and it's a way to burn calories and counter my consumption of calories. And I just had a knee replaced 2 years ago.
Oh, I forgot that.
Yeah. So it's a great way to exercise that knee and not to abuse that artificial knee. So that's one. It's walking such an incredible physical activity that actually preserves health and joint health. So the second thing about it, in addition to this, its health benefits, is it's a meditation,
mm-hmm.
in many ways. And in fact, as you may know, there is a formal walking meditation. And I have used walking as a way to just think about certain concepts and principles. I've also used it to listen to podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps
mm-hmm.
I'll be listening to this one someday.
Ta-da, yes.
But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the walking does all those things.
Mm-hmm.
Walking also gives me an opportunity, though, and last but not least, to experience other venues, other geographies,
mm-hmm.
Other cultures, other cities in a very intimate way. It's not much more intimate than taking a city step by step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a friend in my 20s who would walk Chicago all the time.
Oh,
and he said, oh, it's so great to know the city this way. And then I had a friend do that with New York as well. They were ahead of their time. So let's talk about Camino, which is, For listeners who don't know it, go out and get the movie The Way with Martin Sheen in it, and that would be a way for you to understand more about The Way. But say the words more slowly, the way you say them so quickly. I like the Spanish. But and then what's this journey? Tell us about your journey.
Yeah. So the name of the walk is the El Camino de Santiago, The Way of St. James. And the walk dates back over 1,000 years. It became one of the three major pilgrimages in Christianity. One was Jerusalem. First and foremost, of course, was Rome, St. Peter's. And this became one of them because it was believed that the relics of St. James were found and they were buried in Santiago. And so then this became a place to go to. And the church for in that time had something called indulgences, and one could essentially buy their way out of sin or pay their way, and one was to walk this, and it became very popular. And so it's because it's been done for over 1,000 years, it's an incredibly well-supported hike. And in fact, it's probably the best-supported hike in the world. You don't go 5 miles without having a little pathway or roadside cafe and get a little cafe con leche or two or three, and or if it's in the afternoon, stop and have a beer or some of those great Spanish wines. So it's a well-supported hike, and people do it for probably 3 reasons. And they ask you at the end, they give you a certificate if you do this, why did you do it? And you can say you've done it essentially for religious purposes because you're a Catholic and this means something to you. You've done it for spiritual reasons. And so, of course, there are people of all faiths who do this. And it's a time for them to reflect in the greater spiritual sense. And then there are people who do it for the cultural and exercise component. I probably did a combination of the latter two, a combination of the spiritual and the cultural and the exercise. Mm-hmm. You meet fantastic people. You see fantastic sites, churches and buildings and small villages that are thousands of years old, and then, of course, you experience a different culture. It as part of my retirement, I always wanted to learn a language. Mm-hmm. Well, what better opportunity to learn Spanish, mm-hmm. Castilian Spanish. And so actually, I studied Spanish a year before I did the walk, and mm-hmm. and that came in handy.
Mm-hmm.
After the walk, I realized I just needed a couple words to order beer.
So your vocabulary shrank.
That's a good way of putting it. Actually shrank.
What a great gateway to go through to start a new phase of life. It was almost a ritualistic initiation that you knew you wanted or something.
You're absolutely right, John. That's mm-hmm. it served that purpose in many, many ways.
Mm-hmm. It would take away the type A in you for right?
That's right. And actually my feet after 2 weeks took away the type A because I wasn't gonna walk real fast after 2 weeks.
What do you think needs to be said about other adults as they I'll say at your age, I'm about 4 years older than you. I just turned 68. But what do you think people in our decade ought to be thinking about in terms of changes ahead? Because it feels to me like we don't have the right schools in place for us to make this mm-hmm. adult transition. You kind of have to do it for yourself.
Right.
Any comments you'd make about that?
Something I think you're alluding to is there, and certainly this podcast and series of podcasts can help, is one needs to actively think about retirement. And of course, the way most people actively think about it is in terms of financial terms. And that's obviously important. You have to address those if you're going to be able to do what you want to do in retirement. But there's so much more that can be addressed. I think the things that come up in the literature about retirement are the importance of relationships. It's incredible to maintain relationships and build relationships. We're social animals, and that social construct is critical. Mm-hmm. It's important to have a purpose. For many people, it's very important. Some people, we're all a spectrum, right? But mm-hmm. some people, perhaps not as much. But for many, many people, having something that gives them a sense of purpose, and it may not be one thing. It can be a potpourri of things, that come together that give them that sense of purpose. I think those are two very important things. I think maintaining health, I think if there's anything we've learned about health in the last decade or two, it's not only that health is important for the physicality of health, the physiology of health, but it's one of the single most important components of healthy mental function. of avoiding depression, of working out of sadness. Health and exercise is phenomenal in that regard. Mm-hmm. Those are just a couple of the things mm-hmm. that are so important. But if people don't think about these things, what I have seen happen, and I hope I'm not jumping on a question, but what I see people doing is they leave retirement either doing nothing, because they think it's just a time to do nothing, and then because they haven't thought about what they value and how they can live their life around their values and principles and purposes, they feel lost and get depressed. I've seen people that retire and then they feel a void, and suddenly their life is filled with volunteering. Now, I believe in volunteering. I think it's very important. It's a sense of purpose. But some people volunteer to the extent that they're not living their lives. Mm-hmm. I was just talking to a person 2 weeks ago. Oh, I don't have enough time to do anything. I'm so involved with everything. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a time to experience all of life, mm-hmm. to try new experiences, to think. Now, if that brings somebody joy and happiness, that's one thing. But this person clearly was stressed, you know, by all the volunteering. You know, the other thing I've seen happen, I've actually seen this happen more than anything. I've seen people retire, not knowing what they want to do, mm-hmm. and go back to what they were doing before. Mm-hmm. And maybe not full-time, maybe part-time, but just fall back into that old habit. Mm-hmm. And so I think the single most important thing is to really challenge yourself with new experiences. Try things you thought you would never try. I mean, it's a beautiful time to fail at something. Because it's really not a failure, right? I mean, you're learning about new likes, about things that may give you a new sense of purpose. You're learning so many different things when you experiment like that, and this is the perfect opportunity. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're going to do something and it's not going to work out, and you're going to go, oh my gosh, you know, I'm in the poorhouse, I'll never be able to mm-hmm. make it, my family's going to starve. No, you're past that. Mm-hmm. So you're in a time when you really are surrounded by a cushion mm-hmm. for experimenting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're truly spending some time in play, mm-hmm. being playful about this. Is that a too light of a word, Dan, or is that how you're kind of going at this?
Yeah, I mean, part of this is play. Mm-hmm. However we describe play. I have my youngest daughter is into stagecraft, mm-hmm. Actually with a touring group right now as a stage technician. And so she loves the theater. And about a month and a half ago, she said, Dad, I'm going through withdrawal from theater. This was before she started her touring group. And I said, let's go to New York City and let's just watch musicals. We'll get the cheapest tickets if we have to, mm-hmm. standing room only. We'll just go out there. We'll spend 4 days. We'll see at least one musical a day. Mm-hmm. That was spontaneous for me, and it was play. Mm-hmm. It was fun. We had a great time. Mm-hmm. We had a great time.
Wow. So I'm going to leave on that wonderful note of you hanging out in New York and
with my daughter.
Being with a dear one and going to musicals and listen to those great singers and that wonderful music. So thank you, Dan, much for being here.
Thanks for the opportunity to share my experiences.
Yeah, it's been great to have you here, and I'll have you come back on your 74th, and you can tell us what that decade was like.
Well, if I'm in town. I may be wandering the streets of Paris.
That's true. Well, I'll bring a mic your way then.
Okay.
Thank you, Dan. Artie Isaac is a well-known business force in my community, and he's a Vistage chair. If you know Vistage, that's a forum for business and adult learning and leadership learning. And Artie's kind of taken the world by storm in that organization, and he's got a marketing and a creativity and innovation background. He's taught in business schools, and he's spoken around the world. He's an active blogger, and he is a really imaginative human being and I emphasize the human being, who I really like him as a person, and as I've gotten to know him, I wanted to talk to him about this thing that I'm calling aging and ripening and maturing. And Artie's in his 50s. How old are you, Artie?
I'm 56 and a half.
Yeah, so what are you doing here? Because a guy your age, when I was your age, the last thing I wanted to do was get interviewed about aging, because I didn't think I knew anything about it, nor did I think I cared. I didn't think about it much. So anyway, we're really glad you're here. And tell us a little bit about what you're thinking about in this whole arena that allows you to be here today.
Well, first of all, John, I will talk to you anywhere, even if it is recorded, and because I have always found time spent with you is well worth it. I also sort of thought on the way over here, and by that I mean yesterday as I was thinking about it, that I've always wanted to get some advance warning about what's coming. When our children were young, I always taught Sunday school classes a year ahead of the older child so that it might have some sort of understanding of what's coming. And I don't know if that was helpful or not. Maybe it just helped to calm me down a little bit. But I find this similar. You suggested, why don't we talk about what aging looks like to us or to me at this moment? And I find that to be a helpful prompt for looking forward.
Well, I appreciate your taking me up on this, because I think I could have used more forethought when I was your age. And I remember the notion that I was in my early 60s, 61 or 62, and I finally started saying, well, you know, I do feel pretty well in the second half of my life right now. Well, by then I was so far past the second half that it made no sense. And so I wondered why I didn't look for the signs earlier, or why it didn't make sense. Even though I appreciated the journey people were on and all that, I really hadn't studied it yet or given it deeper thought. So how are you experiencing your ripening and maturing at this stage? What's it like for you?
It started with accompanying my late mother of blessed memory to all of her friends' funerals. She out-survived everyone and told me so. And so I had a lot of experience with funerals and obituaries. So I was sort of cognitively prepared for this, but... And then lately, as I've been a coach or a Vistage chair, I have sat with a lot of people who are at different points in the life cycle, and I've seen aging and loss, and I've seen wisening and illumination as well. Where am I in this? If you were to ask me, how do I know my age? You know, someone once said to me, "Hey, if you didn't know your chronological age, how old would you think you are?" And I think, well, I think I'm 21. I think I'm 22. There's not been a lot of development since then. But I also, you know, in my knees, you know, physically, there are the reminders of gravity. And in my mind, I feel the benefits of, while there might be a little degradation of memory for names and finding the right word, I feel like there is a greater opportunity, a greater facility around understanding larger conceptual structures, how intuitively the world works, whether in interactions with people or on the larger scale.
Well, one asset at this age is, from the intelligence people, and this goes down to the neuroscience people, is they call it crystalline intelligence, and it's really pattern recognition.
Yeah, I feel that.
And so I know I was liking that side of it a lot when I was in my 50s some 10 years ago. It's like, oh, look at all these great things I'm seeing now. I need less data points, and aren't I rocking? And then, but at the same time, I wasn't looking at any of the downsides you just mentioned. I didn't have, my mom wasn't taking me off to funerals and stuff. So I was able to stay in denial. And so I'm just, I guess, appreciating what you're willing to look at. What do you anticipate then? Is it that even a question of how you anticipate 60s and beyond? Or?
Well, I mean, I'm not much of a planner generally, truly. I live in very short-term time. I can remember back to, you know, breakfast yesterday, and I have a pretty good plan through dinner tonight. But I really don't. I'm not looking forward in a lot of ways. It's largely because I'm lucky, because I'm fortunate in so many ways that I feel like I can just keep doing what seems nutritious and delightful. And so so what am I looking forward to? I mean, I know that none of us gets out alive, but this isn't just about eventual mortality. I think of myself in one of, if not the best decade, one of the best decades of life. But I also have mentors and friends who are a little bit older than me and maybe a lot older than me. And I'm pretty optimistic. I think that I will survive and thrive and continue to grow and learn. I think that I will become increasingly more inner directed, pushing towards the things that I want to do and I want to learn, feeling less judged by others, and if they're judging, finding their judgments less relevant and influential for me and what I choose to do. I'm really thrilled with the opportunity to live in this time. I am, you know, listen, we might be in the middle of a geopolitical unraveling, but in my own little world, I'm pretty optimistic.
I know you meditate.
I
think
I do.
You teach some meditation. You talked about Tai Chi, I think, earlier, or Aikido, or one of those.
Tai Chi.
Talk about practices that foster a kind of wisdom for you, or at least interiority, Artie.
Sure. The best lately. So the Myers-Briggs folks, and I guess I'm one of them, we learn that there's a switch in life often where we go to our opposite functions as we maybe tire of the old tools we've been using. I don't mean to be too conceptual about this. I'm an intuitive, and the opposite of that, the opposite of that, the polarity there is sensing. And I find that as I'm getting older, I am more attuned to sensing. And so some of the things I would say are sensing in nature. I love walking in the woods right now. I find that to be enormously joyful, especially now with the fall colors. But anytime, a friend of mine told me that the Norwegians have a saying, there's no such thing as bad weather. There's only bad clothing. And I find that to be true. So I've invested in enough bootery and jacketry to be able to go out in all weather, rain or shine or snow. Tai Chi is important to me. Meditation is important to me. I've meditated since I was 15, on and off, sometimes off for years at a time, and on as recently as just about an hour ago. I find that meditation is one of those great radical revolutionary steps to, because the world doesn't care if I meditate. The world simply doesn't care. The world wants me to, you know, go out and consume something, right? We're in a consumer society. We're not in a meditator's society. So when I meditate, I'm actively moving towards me and my experience. And I find that to be just fabulous, whether it's transcendental meditation, which has been my practice, or any of many others that are available. I think that is an activity that I really enjoy. I am lucky enough to have a hand to hold, and I find that walking around the block, holding Elisa's hand, and it's important that I be holding her hand, not just walking side by side, I find that to be extremely grounding and you know, a touchstone both physically but also bringing me back to a recalibrated zero. What was the question?
That was perfect. I don't know what it was either, but whatever you were talking about, I asked you about meditation. And what you were giving me was grounding practices. And I think what we notice as we age and mature is our bodies decline, but there's great news about somatics.
Yes.
For elders. And if we have the right practices to calm our minds and to stay in touch with nature and to stay in touch with each other through touch, by the way, somatics are important. A somatic, just fancy word for body and sensing body. I think things are still on our very much in our favor on that, unless we're in pain, if we're in a lot of pain.
Well, that's right. That's right. Yeah, I have a somatic therapist, Suzanne Roberts, who's teaching me how to breathe and how the way I've held my body and the way I breathe, it's almost like I'm a musical instrument that was tuned for a song that I was taught when I was, you know, 4 or 6 or 8 years old. Well, now I'm singing a different song and I'm mistuned, and she's showing me how to be more aware and how to sit in ways that are not only more healthful, but help me to connect more with others around me. Yeah, the great joys right now. And so it's funny. I feel like I've moved from hedonism to self-care, and maybe self-care is a form of hedonism. I don't think so. I sort of feel like self-care is a way of my not, you know, maybe needing to ask too much from others at some point. If I'm lucky, I know a lot of this is based on genetics and just plain luck, but I also want to do my part to be self-sufficient as best I can. So I find myself, the idea of self-care, the very phrase self-care, never occurred to me until about 4 or 5 years ago. And now I realize that it's more than self-indulgence. It is in many ways an ethical obligation.
Nice, nice. I had heard the word self-care some years ago, and then someone told me, when you go through a stressful experience, oh, it's time for extreme self-care now, as opposed to the opposite, which is sometimes we get hard on ourselves and kick ourselves in the rear, which is something we need to do. But
I do find that I'm drinking less. Mm-hmm. I find that, on the other hand, I'm eating more ice cream. So, you know, I'm a goner one way or another.
You are. In one plus, one minus. But who's to talk
also,
against ice cream?
When I get up in the middle of the night, because sleep becomes sleep is definitely becoming, I don't know about elusive, but unpredictable, I don't fight the pillow. I get up now and I have a cup of tea if Elise is awake with her, or if not, on my own. I write when I want to write. I don't apologize for sending emails in the middle of the night. I don't. If people ask, why are you working on vacation, I tell them I'm not working. I'm corresponding with you, and I love you. You know, I'm playing by my rules now, and I honestly don't think that's selfish. I think it's self-aware, and I think it's in the best interest of those around me.
I do too. And the intermittent sleep thing is one of those wake-up calls again, saying, this is different.
Literally a wake-up call.
A wake-up call, literally. So do this then. So tell us what good books you know about, or what are your thoughts about what constitutes happiness in older age or wisdom in older age? What do you see there?
My favorite book on this topic is called Chasing Daylight. And here's one of those moments where I can't remember a name. It was written about 10 years ago, and it was written by the head of KPMG, the international consulting and I guess accounting firm. And he became ill and was diagnosed with some sort of inoperable brain cancer or tumor. And he was told, you'll be dead in 6 to 9 months without any chance otherwise, and it will be painless. And he wrote this book. And the book is where I got that idea earlier that I mentioned of noisy death or quiet death. But he talks about what it's like to try to focus on the present in, you know, an attempt maybe to be Buddhist. I'm not Buddhist. I might be a Jew-boo. I don't know, but I'll pause for laughter. It was really helpful to me because he talks about how we are rushing forward and not pausing. Where else to get wisdom? I honestly think wisdom is in the air. It's everywhere. And what is best done is, for me, is to turn off that which blocks wisdom. And by this I mean there is a constant passion that we have. We almost think it's an ethical obligation to know what is going on all the time and to follow whichever media we love. And while some dose of that is good, we don't need a 24-hour dose of it unless we're currency traders. And yet I find that people are listening to other people's ideas all the time to a fault. I'll tell you how I listen to NPR. I do listen to NPR. But what I will do is I will listen to a story whether it's happy or sad or informative or just amusing. And then I will turn off the radio and think about it rather than rushing to the next car on the train. The train of thought, I need to sit in each car for a little while. So I do like listening to NPR when I'm looking for a prompt, but I don't want it to be wallpaper from start to finish. So I think wisdom arrives in our percolating on the stimuli that come our way. Things happen. Baseball, the Cubs win the World Series, and we're left to reckon with that. But reckoning takes time, and I believe it takes some silence. So I drive mainly in silence, and I work mainly in silence.
So in today's program, I think you heard wonderful optimistic themes from two consciously aging guests who are looking at how they can go about this stage of life. This is Stories for the Ages, and it's a production of WOSU Public Media, and our sound engineer is the wonderful Eric French. I'm John Schuster. Thanks.